Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kenya. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, and this is the official Lions podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, there's still a bunch of openings left on the coaching staff as we approach the Senior Bowl, but one, the big one, has been filled, and that's defensive coordinator Corey Undlin from the Philadelphia Eagles, former defensive backs coach, now the defensive coordinator for our Detroit Lions.
You know, he's a very interesting story. You know, I knew a little bit about him as a coach from his Denver days when he was part of that defense with John Fox. I knew he went over to Philly with Chip Kelly, but that was about it. I didn't really follow him a whole lot past that. So he wasn't a name that we had talked about because, you know, it wasn't somebody that was, you know, within our, you know, it wasn't within our normal discussion points of connections. But, you know, connections seem to go pretty far back, right? And this is how they, Patricia and Undlin first met, what, 15 years ago?
In 2004.
Yep. And since then, and it's like a really interesting story how both of them have gotten there. Both of them were teachers. And while they were trying to become coaches, and then they left teaching to take a underpaying coaching job to follow the passion. And, you know, they both kind of worked their way up through the ranks. Patricia's was a lot quicker. He went right into Syracuse, and whereas Unlin's was a little bit more indirect.
Circuitous.
And then he ends up getting, you know, connected to the right person, and that coach has connections to the right person, and then all of a sudden, Bill Belichick gets wind of him, and Belichick brings him in, same time he brings Patricia in, doing a kind of a staff reload, and you got these young guys who, 15 years ago, were younger coaches, young coaching-wise anyways, they come in and they're coaching important parts of the defense. Patriots win the Super Bowl that year, and then Patricia stays on the Patriots staff, whereas Undlin shifts over. I believe he joined the Browns right after that.
Yep.
So he, you know, he went to the Browns. He was with the Jaguars. He was with Denver for a while, and in Denver, he really, I think, the players that he had in Denver were really impressive. I mean, at one point he had Chris Harris Jr., he had Bradley Roby and Aqib Talib. Those were his three corners, right? And so I think that his last year, Talib and Harris both went to the Pro Bowl that year as corners under his coach.
Tutelage.
Yeah. Oh, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie was also there under him. And I think that it might have been that year that all three of them went there. It was pretty impressive. Ironically, all three of those guys are free agents this year. So it would be interesting to kind of follow these guys and see if they end up wanting to reconnect. Ironically, he comes from Philadelphia, and Ronald Darby and Jalen Mills, the Phillies starting corners, they're both free agents as well. And so maybe one of them want to come over with Undlin if the Lions are interested. All these guys, though, they're either getting to the twilight of their career where they're over 30 or they have some injury or recent injury history if they're under 30. And so they all kind of have like little interesting flaws, I guess. But they're all good players, all with the high potential ceilings. It'd be interesting to watch and to see if any of the defensive back he's coached in the past follow him over. So the other thing I found interesting was he was on the Eagles staff in 2017-18 when the Eagles won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, under Jim Schwartz and the Wide Nine.
And they beat New England and Patricia, and that was Patricia's last game as a...
Well, we're well aware.
Right, so...
Defensive coordinator surrenders 41 points in the Super Bowl.
But but it's another coach now, another coordinator on his staff that he has faced in the Super Bowl as an opposing
like
coach.
Bevel.
Yes, exactly. So I found that very interesting. You know, he these relationships.
Yeah, he knows this guy. That's different,
right? And it's just one of these things where it's not like Bevel, there's a difference in philosophy, but unlike Bevel, there is that coaching history where they're familiar with each other as people and they know each other as coaches. I also think it's interesting where let me backtrack for a second. Udalin will probably bring a lot of what he did in Philly from the secondary standpoint to Detroit.
Evan Donovan's got a question. Okay. What is the biggest difference you anticipate the new defensive coordinator making, and what's one thing you're sure will stay the same with the new defensive coordinator? So there you go.
Excellent.
Here it leads you into your explanation here.
Thank you, Evan. I think the front seven will stay the same. I don't think there will be any changes to the front seven. I think there will be some changes to the back six, but I don't think it's going to be overhauling schematically. It's still going to be press man. It's still going to be a lot of physicality, but I think you're going to see some technique differences. And everything that you hear about these players that have coached or that he has coached is they talk about the fact that he is able to find ways to teach technique to players that have been around for 10 years in new and interesting ways, even though it's the same general idea. He brings that teaching background that he had from when he was younger, and he can apply it to the football field. And he can show these guys how to do things a little bit differently, shave off tenths of a second here, shave off a quarter of a second here, and find ways to be better technicians. And that should hopefully go a long way to making the defense more successful. Now, when you look back to his John Fox days, they ran a similar defensive front that like the Lions run. It's not going to be exactly the same, but with Von Miller as an outside linebacker, yeah, but he's rushing the passer. That's very similar to
Ware.
Right? And so you had this kind of hybrid. You were using a linebacker as a pass rusher, and then you're using more two-gapping defensive linemen up front. One like guy that stands out to me was Sylvester Williams, played in that system, and now he plays. And then he plays in this system. He played in our system for a little bit before he moved on. I think he'll lean on some of his Denver roots with John Fox to draw some of his coaching comparisons. Now, there have been some reports that he won't do a lot of the play calling, at least early.
Really?
We'll see how that goes, though. And that didn't come from Detroit. That came from a Philly reporter. So I don't know how much truth there is to that.
I would think Patricia's going to want to call a lot of his own plays since this might be a swan song. Likely will be a swan.
Very possible. And we've talked about this before. If we said it last week on the podcast, if they brought in a defensive back, a defensive coordinator with the defensive back's background, that they would need a really strong linebackers coach. And that spot hasn't been filled yet.
Still open.
So it'll be very interested to see who that ends up being. Also open is the defensive back coach, which is, I still think it's going to be Steve Gregory. He's going to get promoted there. We've talked about him a couple episodes ago.
Yep.
Tight ends coach is still open as well. I don't know about that. We've been told that by the Senior Bowl executive, Nagy, that the Lions have confirmed to him that they will have a full staff going into the Senior Bowl, which starts on Sunday.
So if they don't have a full staff, do they not? Are they not allowed?
Oh no, it's all too far down. We're way too far down the road to change anything at this point.
Well, they can tell them whatever they want.
Oh, sure they can.
They don't have to do it.
But my guess is that they have.
They'll probably have people in place.
They might even have it in place already, but they just haven't felt the need to tell us.
Why haven't they felt? If that's true, why would they just not tell us?
I think they're waiting until they want to tell us. Right. Just like everything, they want to control the information.
It's so laborsome. It's so exhausting.
Yeah, I think the only reason that we know about Udalin. Sorry about that.
Well, because Philly reporters wanted to break all the news.
Well, somebody else broke it. But an ESPN guy.
Yes, not right? Locally.
Yeah, Field. Yates broke it.
Fielding Yates.
Just Field, right? Isn't it?
Field Yates? I like calling him like Fielding Yost.
Now, the other coordinator, I got wind of earlier in that day, And I started poking around, and I'm sure other people started poking around as well. Because if I got the information, I know other people probably did as well. And I think they released his hiring because there were local reporters poking around to try and find out if he was confirmed. So that's Braden Combs, the special teams coordinator, right?
Yeah, the new special teams guy.
So Combs, I had heard the name, and I just put it away on the back burner, didn't think anything of it.
So they're not sexy hires by any stretch of the imagination. But you will mention that he's the assistant special teams coach in Cincinnati,
mm-hmm.
and they're the number one ranked via DVOA
mm-hmm.
as far as special teams go.
Yep, and number 7 the year before. So,
but we were like number 2 for a big chunk of the year.
And finished number 8, right? But what did we talk about? We talked about consistency, right?
But no consistency.
And Cincy has been a consistent special teams team.
I would be lying to you to say if I've watched loads of Cincinnati Bengal football this past couple of years.
Well, Darian Simmons, the special teams coordinator in Cincy, is very highly respected. He learned under him for the last 7 years. Combs has been called a riser now for a couple of years. Almost got the job in Green Bay last year. They went a different direction, but he was down to one of the finalists, I guess, from what I understand. And so he was a guy that was getting looked at previously. So it's not like this is just some out of the blue guy from a bad team. They were a bad team that had to lean on their special teams, and their special teams still produced at a higher rate than everybody else, even though they were doing a much higher workload. They were still producing over and over and over and over. And so that's what you have to really take away from it, from my perspective, is that this is a guy who has seen that consistency, and he's widely thought of as a bright young mind. And again, you're reaching outside of your comfort zone to bring a guy in, which is what everyone wants us to do anyway. So let's see, roll the dice and see what happens here. Because I'm very okay with this hire.
These two hires, very unsexy hires. And people are like, well, you know, what do you think? What do you think about this guy? What do you think about Unlin? What do you think he's going to do? I'm like, well, I have no idea. He's never been a defensive coordinator before.
Yep.
Know? Like, and you know, we always discuss with people that you can always just toe the Lions line and just say, oh, it's going to be terrible because the Lions are always terrible. But it's like, well, we have no idea what this Unlin guy is going to do. You know, we have no idea what Combs is going to be all about. Like,
sure.
So, because they haven't done it before, so this is a nice little wait and see.
But I'm okay with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, there's nothing we can do about it.
Do you want another Paul Pasqualoni? You know what I mean? Some guy that's 7 years old that has loads of experience, right? Yeah. So
taking over a defensive coordinator.
So Combs isn't. So he has 10 years experience, which means he started coaching at 23. But his dad is a lifetime coach as well. His dad, Kerry Combs, is currently the Titans defensive backs coach. He's been that for the last 2 years. Prior to that, he was the defensive backs coach at Ohio State under Urban Meyer. So it's not like hasn't been around this a while.
No, there's a certain level of nepotism going on.
Well, I like the upside here.
Well, yeah, because we don't know. There's nothing but upside right now because we don't even know, right?
Sure.
All right. Next, Daniel Cornell. His question is, with the defensive line struggles this season, do you think the defensive line coach should be replaced?
So that's Bo Davis, and my answer is no. I think
the injuries is what did him in. And Damon Harrison's lack of training in the offseason.
Well, but that's also injury related there too, right? I think you're so banged up by injuries, it would be an unfair move to move on from Davis. Not only is your number one defensive tackle and Damon Harrison banged up, but your number two in hand is gone pretty much all year. And then your number three is Ashawn, who is struggling and ended up on IR. And then your number four is Mike Daniels, who was oft injured and never really played. And then your number five was Kevin Strong.
This kid who came out of nowhere.
Who then ended up on IR. And keep in mind, Kevin Strong's best years in college were under Bo Davis at UTSA. And then after that, it's John Atkins, right? So, like, who is a guy who came over last year and was a guy that Bo Davis developed. So it's really, I think, would be unfair to put the struggles on him as opposed
to
injuries.
Give him another chance.
Yeah.
Torque.game.atta. Hopefully I didn't say something horrible there. Why is Bevel considered a Sun Messiah by most of the fan base? There you go. Great improvement to last year, agreed. Some great passing designs. But outdated overall philosophy, too much focus on the run, no help by scheme for Driscoll Blau, too conservative with the lead. In my opinion, he is nearly as much to blame for our inability to finish games as the defense. No risks and fatal play calls in the fourth quarter. Wrong decisions in third and fourth down en masse. Ooh, excellent.
I completely disagree.
All right.
Almost to each point.
The Logan Thomas play, that was a mistake.
There was an error.
I know that's just one play.
There are multiple plays that I can point to that are flaws. None of them fall into what he's talking about here. Maybe one. The Arizona play in week one.
They handled that very poorly.
Yep. Other than that, Stafford through eight games had 2,500 yards, so he's on pace to 5,000 yards.
They're 3-4-1.
But you can't call it a run first defense when your quarterback's
offense.
I'm sorry, you can't call it a run first offense when your quarterback's passing for 5,000 yards.
No,
it's not. It's a very balanced offense, and the fact that he was able to actually make them competitive with Driscoll and Blau.
I did like that they could move the ball a little bit. When Stafford was out, they didn't have enough to overcome.
But he had to redo the offense to fit Driscoll, and then he had to redo it again to fit Blau. And he adapted that offense to fit both of those quarterbacks. I think that's phenomenal. I think he was more aggressive than what we've seen in the past. I thought he was more creative. I think a lot of the late game play, conservative play calling, comes more from above him than it does from him. I really liked
fourth
what I
down
saw.
Calls are being made by the head coach.
Well, he's weighing in on that heavily for sure. I think there's a lot. You had a lot of injuries at key positions on offense, and I thought he kept them competitive up until the last four games of the season. And I think that's a big credit to him.
They were done by then. They were ready to tank it by then.
Yes, he wants to run the ball. And yes, he's going to run the ball because that is an overall philosophy of this coaching staff that it comes from Patricia, not from Bevel. But to say Bevel is a run first guy, I just disagree with that. I mean, Stafford was destroying people with his ability to go downfield, with his accuracy. Like, there were so many things that he was doing right.
He did throw the ball past the sticks on third down plays.
A ton.
Which Cooter did not do.
He was the second highest pass-the-sticks passer in the league. Like, he averaged, 2.1 yards past the sticks, which was, I think, second in the league. That's aggressive. That's smart play calling. I'm going down the rabbit hole here. I don't want to sound like I'm boasting him up too much.
Well, that's what they say. He says most of the fan base.
But yes, he had his flaws. And like I said, the Arizona one was early. And yes, there were some issues, learning curve in the first half of the season that he was figuring out. But there were a handful of plays that I could point to that say that could have been better. But for the most part, I was impressed with what he did, especially with what he had available and his overall philosophy. So, look, I get that maybe he's being touted up too much, but
he makes a good point there. He should not be touted as a Messiah. I don't know.
But I don't think you can counter it. I don't think you can go off all the way to the other
that
side.
He's a problem? No. Yeah. They have much bigger problems than Daryl Bevel. And I think this is a symptom of one of the bigger problems of Lions fandom, where the fan base hates itself, or half of the fan base hates the other half of the fan base for some reason. You know, I mean, it's because we've gone through so much, and there's there's these pessimistic people who, you know, I probably fit more in the category of, and we're tired of the optimistic fans, you know, defending them all the time.
Who are optimistic fans?
Yeah, no, that wouldn't describe anybody I know. But yeah, like I think that in turn, like, the one half of the fan base will take certain things the other half will say and amp them up. Like, oh, this guy's the Messiah, huh? The 16th on the 16th rush offense, and what were they, like, 12th in passing offense? That's what we want to hang our hat on.
I think they were 12th even after.
Yeah, that was that was post-Stafford.
Yeah, when they had him, they were much
higher. Like, in the top five or whatever. Right. But that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that, like, there's a fracture within the own fan base where the fans hate each other.
Maybe it's because I had to watch what was Cooter at the end when he just couldn't get anything done.
Yeah, he wasn't great.
That this was a big rebound and a big plus in the win column for the Lions this year, in my opinion.
All right. We're going to talk about the Shrine Bowl and Senior Bowl week. It's not the Shrine Bowl. It's the East-West Shrine Game.
Yeah.
Mathis asks, can you discuss in detail how the Senior Bowl works, especially for teams who are coaching one of the sides?
So the way it works is each event, the Shrine Week is this week, Senior Bowl is next week, and everyone arrives on the Sunday prior to the game, okay? So so this week, the Shrine coaches and the scouts and the fans and the media, they all arrived on Sunday. And then they go through, and then the Senior Bowl, they'll arrive this coming Sunday. And what they do is they just go through a check-in process, and they are maybe having some initial meetings with the people who run the event, right? The coordinators of the Shrine or Senior Bowl. And then after they get, like, familiarized with what the expectations are of them and what they're supposed to do, then they'll have brief kind of meetings with some Q&A. They'll go through some medical stuff. The following day, there'll be more incorporation with the teams. They'll be able to meet with the teams. They'll get a playbook on the second day. They will now start meeting with the media. They'll also do some more behind-the-scenes testing, psychological stuff and stuff like that. Like, they'll go through those tests in the evening hours. And that will continue on throughout the week because they can't do everybody in one shot. And so that second day, it's, again, more familiarizing with themselves, with the teams and the playbook and whatnot. The following day, then, the practices start. And when the practices start, you have the coaches from the team that is not leading the practice. So, like, on the first day of the Senior Bowl, the South will start first. So that's the Bengals. The Bengals will go out, and they will run a practice. And all of the Lions staff will be there watching the practice. So they will actively be scouting the other team before they are going to run their practice. So a lot of teams will send, like, a couple of scouts or maybe a position coach for a day or two. The GMs make their appearances here and there. But you'll have the entire Lions staff, the entire Lions scouting staff, they'll all be there, and they're all going to be watching the same players. So they'll watch the opposing team. Then when it's their turn to go on the field, now they're running the drills, and they're getting a much closer, more intimate look at the players. They're understanding, like, who's doing what, and you know, what questions they're asking, who's picking up on the playbook fast, who's not. Are they improvising? Are they getting along with teammates? All kinds of things like this during that practice. Then they go into the evening, more interviews with the media, more these events typically put on, like, some events, like guest speakers and stuff like that. And then they'll have more psychological testing, and then boom, on to the next day. And then it's kind of a repeat process. This happens for, like, 3 days where you're watching and coaching, and then you're doing your own coaching, and then repeat, right, for the next 3 days. And then on the last day, they give the players, on that Friday, they give the players a day off. And what they do instead is they do more, like, community outreach. sign autographs for fans, go to hospitals, do a variety of different things, more community-based, right? And when they do this, this is an opportunity for the coaches to get other details done leading into the game, and then the game happens. And while by Friday, most of the scouts, most of the media have left, but the Lions and the Bengals, their staffs will stay all the way through Saturday because obviously they're coaching. You might see teams, leave one guy behind or something like that. But they can always ask for game film. So what will happen is, practice film, because they tape all the practices. So the Lions will have chance to review the game film before everyone else, review their own practice film before everyone else, but then they'll get it with the rest of the NFL when the Senior Bowl or in-trying game sends it all out to them later. So it's a lot of information gathering at the time, but the big advantage is that you get that up-close
one-on-one
knowledge. Yeah, one-on-one. But you also get more behind the scenes. You get to know more about what these guys' character are. And for a team like the Lions, where character is a huge priority, they're going to know which guys they want and which guys they don't. Like, I was talking to a person earlier today who was at the Shrine Game, the Senior Bowl. When Jim Schwartz was there, and Ezekiel Ansah was there. And they said after the first day or two of practice, it was like a foregone conclusion. Everyone knew the Lions were going to take Ansah because they were like so animated and in love with him. Like, it was just clear as it could be. So
you could see a nice marriage for a while.
You could see things. Yeah, you're able to ascertain more about these players. And what ends up happening is that there's a real good likelihood that the Lions then in turn take one or two of these guys in the draft or after the draft. If some of them are undrafted free agents, you have a relationship with these guys and you'll have a chance to bring these guys in, and these are usually your higher profile guys. So there's a lot of advantages. The schedule gets really intense really quick. I forgot there's like a combine style measurement thing that everyone goes through, and it's pretty cool, but it's going to be real intense for the people that are down there, media, Lions, coaches, etc.
All right, Chris Robbins asks, who are your favorite Shrine Game players that we should be looking out for prior to the Senior Bowl, including ones that may or may not get a call up to Mobile?
The big ones that stood out to me, Levante Bellamy from Western Michigan. He's a running back. He's got very good first step quickness. By the time he hits his second step, he's usually at top speed. Got some rare speed. So that'll be a guy that'll be interesting to watch. He's listed as a wide receiver. I think he may end up being like a running back. But it's Navy's quarterback, Malcolm Perry. Quarterback for Navy for 3 years, but he has like over 2,000 yards rushing every season, right?
Yeah, it's a Navy quarterback.
Yep. He's 5'9", 190. So they're going to try and pigeonhole him in as a slot receiver. Mm-hmm. Be interesting. He's got the quickness for it. He's got the shiftiness. He's really hard when he gets in the open field.
And he can go play in the NFL right away. He doesn't have to go serve.
Yeah, with the new rules, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's very interesting to me. Malcolm Perry's a guy, because, again, he came from the quarterback position. So it'll be, are you going to find a Julian Edelman type of player, right? Because he was a former quarterback. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Johnson from Missouri is another smaller slot receiver who could turn some heads. Very undersized, 5'8", 180, but he will he'll be very quick and difficult to handle. Then on defense, Bravion Roy from Baylor, a nose tackle who's got some quickness, underrated day three guy. Raekwon Williams from MSU.
Yeah.
He's a guy who I'll be interested in.
Character guy.
Lions have been scouting him for a couple of years now.
Hopefully he's got a nice long NFL career ahead of him.
And he would fit the Lions, too. He would be nice depth. The other school here in Michigan is gets LaVert Hill, as well as a few other guys. I think LaVert Hill's probably the best cornerback at the Shrine game this year. He's a lot of fun. again, a day three guy who I think could get a look, fit the Lions scheme. But the guy that I'm most interested in is Alex Highsmith from Charlotte. He's an edge rusher. He is, I think, like in the 250s, right? So he's not very big.
He's a lighter one.
Right? But he played a lot of time at the 4-eye, which is on the inside shoulder of the offensive tackle. So not quite the 3 technique, but he's still shaded over the tackle. He can play from the 4-eye all the way through the jack, which is kind of like what you see with Austin Bryant. That's kind of how the Lions will use Austin Bryant in that same jack to 4-eye. He's a guy reminiscent of that style of play, and I think he's quick enough and interesting enough that he's on my radar, and I would be I'm very interested to see how he plays in the Shrine Game.
Andre Keck, Tom Wilkinson, Nick Edward, and Evan Donovan all have a very similar question, so it's all put into one. Could Isaiah Simmons be the player Quinn and Patricia target in the draft due to his positional flexibility instead of addressing just cornerback or defensive line by taking Okuda or Brown, for instance?
It is a very interesting player in Simmons. He's a guy that I've reached out to a couple of people to ask questions on. I talked to another analyst that I highly respect today. I talked to him for 2 hours about Simmons. He at Clemson, he has played the Mike, the Will. He's played as a slot corner. He's played as a hang defender, a strong safety, a shallow center field safety, which is like an umbrella, and then a deep safety, like a single high, like the Lions run. In the national championship game, he was lined up on the outside at outside corner, covering a running back. He can cover tight ends. They put him on slot receivers against Ohio State in the playoff game. His range is very, very large. A lot of people are going to like him at linebacker. I don't like him at linebacker. Not in Detroit. Now, maybe he goes to a 4-3 team that wants a slightly undersized. Now, when I say slightly undersized, he's 6'3". He's listed at 6'3", 228, which is not bad for a 4-3 Will. But in the Lions system, he's undersized for the Will. He would be, that's Miles Killebrew size, right? Or maybe a little bit bigger than Miles Killebrew size. He's got definitely longer. But in my opinion, if he were to be selected by Detroit, he would play the Joker role. The Joker safety role is what is currently being played by Tracy Walker. It's a safety who plays at the linebacker level, who is mostly kept on the outside because you want to keep him out of traffic. You want to allow him to operate in space. You want to allow him to run free. You can play him in man coverage against a tight end, against a running back, or a slot receiver. Exactly all of the things that he's done at Clemson. The only problem I see with adding him to the Lions is you're going to have to adjust Tracy Walker's role. And Tracy Walker is a guy that very high on him. I strongly believe that he's headed towards being a Pro Bowl level safety. And if you take him out of the Joker role, now you have to move him to a different role. And yes, you can play him at single high sometimes. And yes, you can play him at the strong safety or box safety, which is Tavon Wilson's role from last year. And yes, you can keep him at the Joker role and you can shift Simmons around as well. But you're taking him out of the spot where I think he's the most successful. So if you're willing to do that, or if you think Simmons has more range and Simmons can spend more time as a strong safety box defender, which he totally can because they cover that position covers the slot as well. And one of my analysts believes he can play single high free safety as well without an issue. His pick against Ohio State was from a single high position. He drifted and made that interception. It was beautiful, literally from the single high. So if you think he can play all three of those spots, which is what they want, then yeah, he'd be a great addition. The trick is, is taking an off-the-ball defender warranted at the third overall pick.
That's a little high.
Traditionally, everyone says no. Traditionally, it's
impact positions.
It's don't take an off the ball guy before pick 10. Then Roquan Smith from Chicago went at pick 8. Then Devin White goes at pick 5 last year. Devin Bush goes at pick 10, right? You're starting to see more off-the-ball guys go higher because of the shift in the NFL philosophy of utilizing more tight ends, needing more off-the-ball speed. So it's a little bit more warranted, but again, I still think 3 is high. I think they will consider him because I think he can fit, and I think they can make the adjustments. It would make a lot more sense to me if they traded back and then found him there. Like they trade with Miami and then they pick him at 5. I think that traditionally makes a lot more sense. I do think they will consider him, but I don't think it will be at linebacker. I think there's the difficult part for Lions fans in reading and learning about Simmons is that if an analyst is giving just a general observation on him, you can't speak to how he fits into every different defense because every defense is going to want to use him differently. And for the Lions, this is how I think he would be utilized. And I bet you can talk to another Lions analyst that will say something completely different and think he should be in a different spot. In my opinion, this is where he fits best. So
hey, you can check that out in your article you wrote about him today.
Yep.
MSU Lions fan asks, what do you think about the non-Derrick Brown defensive tackles available in the draft this year? Javon Kinlaw, Neville Gallimore, Jordan Elliott, Raekwon Davis, etc.
So Derrick Brown is 6'5", 325, and he is a monster big mover, and he's a dominant run stuffer. He can relocate the line of scrimmage. He can anchor the line of scrimmage. He has some pass rushing chops. But he's not elite, right? And but he is everything that the Lions would want in a defensive tackle. The next man that they're going to consider is Javon Kinlaw from South Carolina. Kinlaw is more of a pure three technique who is going to be more of a pass rushing guy. Jim Nagy, the Senior Bowl guy, talked to the Free Press and started making comparisons of Derrick Brown and Ndamukong Suh. I don't agree with that at all. They're not the same player. If anything, Kinlaw is closer to Ndamukong Suh stylistically than Derrick Brown is. Kinlaw, being from South Carolina, they haven't announced which players are going to be on which team, but I'm guessing South Carolina is going to be on the North team. And that would be the Lions.
Geographically incorrect.
Well, because they put the SEC in the South. And he's not, and that's South Carolina's ACC, right?
No, they're no. SEC.
Oh, they are?
Clemson's ACC. Oh, gosh. South Carolina's
ACC. I was
SEC.
Thinking ACC. That's what it was. Oh, all right. Well, if he ends up on the North or on the South, he'll be with the Bengals. If he ends up on the North and he ends up with the Lions will absolutely fall in love with him. He's going to have massive arm length, which they prioritize. He's not much smaller. Then he's almost 6'5", just like Derrick Brown, but he's like 315 rather than 325, so he's not too far away. And in my opinion, I could see he's going to be a guy who is they're going to call a riser, but I think people are really going to start liking him. He could go in the top 10 easily, and I could see him even going a little bit higher as people get more familiar with him.
I'm still a Derrick Brown all the way.
Now, Gallimore played at Oklahoma. He was a guy who played at the nose tackle, but he is more of a pass rusher. Jordan Elliott is more of a pure nose tackle. He played at Missouri. He's probably more like a top 100, whereas Gallimore is probably a second rounder. And then Raekwon Davis will probably end up being in the third. He's basically a bigger A'shaun Robinson. Take that for what you... If you like A'shaun, you'll like Raekwon.
All right, Devin Bacho. But yeah, I don't know. That's a tough one. Is the Okuda hype a real thing? He looks great, but is he really what the Lions need for a first rounder? Personally, I think interior defensive line would be the best thing and would help boost the secondary as well.
Yeah, you know, I think the Okuda hype is real. I am also leaning towards a defensive lineman as opposed to a corner, but I don't think they would rule a corner out. I think Derek Brown, Kinlaw, Esponza from Iowa, Okuda, and Simmons, those are your five defenders that are probably in the mix right now at the top that the Lions are really going to be scouting quite a bit. But I do think the hype is real, and I mostly because it buys them time with Darius Slay. They really highly prioritize corners, and he would be a lock. He would has the potential to be a lockdown corner. You could start him opposite Darius Slay and feel pretty comfortable. And then another, and you buy Owari another year. Now if Slay leaves a year from now, now you don't have to really miss a beat. You don't have to miss too big of a beat. Hopefully by that point, Owari's ready to step up. And so Okudia doesn't have a lot of flaws. He has some flaws, but he doesn't have a lot. And that's one of the reasons why he's talked about so highly. And I get the fact that people talk about young corners don't play well. Well, every once in a while, there's a handful of corners that you can plug and play year one. Jalen Ramsey is a good example. And there's a handful of other guys like that went right after him.
And it's more
him.
And more every year as the college schemes and become more pro-like.
And
the other way around, really.
Yeah, traditionally, there's not many of these guys. They still take a while to learn. But there's one or two guys every couple of years that end up making that you can plug and play right off the bat. And I think Okuda's this guy.
All right, Jovan Willis and Derek, with Okuda potentially becoming a Lion and Slay seeming a little disgruntled last season, do you think there's a real possibility that Slay is not a Lion in 2020? The answer is yes. Slay didn't seem like his jovial self and was hesitant to defend the coaching staff. Well, he probably shouldn't.
I think there's a chance he isn't.
If they want to continue to consolidate power, they'll get rid of him.
But I think he will be. I think when you're in a critical year like they are, you can't trade away your Pro Bowler unless it's for a massive return.
All right. Ethan Wegeler, who are the most appealing early second rounders we should focus on?
This is a little tricky because the next couple of questions are going to ask about a couple of different positions in the second round as well, so I'll skip those players. I would say cornerback makes some sense there, so maybe a guy like A.J. Terrell from Clemson or offensive tackle makes a lot of sense. If Mekhi Becton falls that far, starting to look more and more like he could be a first-rounder, but if he falls, he would make sense because they're going to need to take a tackle
huge.
At some point.
Yeah, 6'7", 370.
And also Isaiah Wilson from Georgia is also a big guy. He could be there in the second round, and either of those guys you could bring in, plug in at right tackle if you move on from Rick Wagner. And then there's two more positions we'll talk about with the next two questions.
Live as a Lion asks, what are your thoughts on grabbing an edge in the second round, pairing with Brown or Okuda in the first? What are the best options for edge at number 35?
So you could be hoping that Kalavion Chaisson from LSU falls. He kind of looks like a first rounder, though, especially after a nice national championship game. Terrell Lewis from Alabama is a guy who makes a lot of sense. Most people think he could be there.
This guy makes more sense than all of them.
Yuta Gross-Matos is a guy who is, again, looking like they're going in the first round. We'll see how that goes. If he falls, he'd be in contention. And then a sleeper is Curtis Weaver from Boise State, who is more of a down defensive end. I think he's a guy who's going to be another riser in the draft process. Not a lot of people are talking about him right now, but he has a skill set that the Lions would like, and I think they could consider him.
No Julian Aquara, since we already have his brother.
I don't think he'd go in a second. He might.
He might be late. Well, maybe we'll see him.
He got exposed a little bit this year.
Andre Brown Jr. and Sparty Time ask, how early does Detroit take a wide receiver?
They could go as early as round two, in my opinion.
Oh, they're not going to take Jerry Jeudy at number
three? Maybe they go. Maybe they do. I don't think they will. But I think, if you trade back, if you acquire another first-rounder, yeah, you could take a receiver in the first. I do think day two makes a lot of sense, though.
All right, what are some options in free agency and the draft for a slot wide receiver? How much of an off-season priority is that position, and what round do you think they will address it? You kind of mentioned the slot rookie thing when talking about the Senior Bowl.
Well, and then Amendola is, I think, someone that's going to return. And if he returns, that puts the priority a little bit lower. Philip Dorsett's another free agent they might look at, but he's more of an outside deep threat. Tavon Austin is a guy if they want a gadget guy, if they're not going to bring back like J.D. McKissick. But his price tag might be a little bit more out there. But I do think Amendola is a guy they'll re-sign in free agency, which then will allow them to wait a little bit. But they're still going to need to take a receiver because none of the receivers are signed beyond 2020. Now, I'm expecting Galladay to get an extension this year, but they're going to need to get somebody early that they can develop. So Brandon Ayuk from Arizona State, Jalen Reagor from TSU, KJ Hamler from Penn State, Devin Duvernay from Texas, all guys that can play the slot at are very good value on day two.
Leo Barwella asks, can we get a breakdown of Ohio State linebacker Malik Harrison?
He's a day two linebacker, probably more like a third rounder, 6'3", 251, so he fits the size parameters. He's going to be a Mike in most systems. He can play Mike or Will here. Run defender, he knows how to stack and shed blocks. He has better speed than he gets credit for. He'll probably test better than people think at the combine. But he's a guy who I think has ascending coverage skills, which is something that will appeal to Lions fans.
The Rod Father, who are your most intriguing / exciting day three prospects?
It's so hard because we really don't know, and I really haven't been able to dig that far into a lot of guys. But I will say Josh Uche from Michigan and Bradley Anai from Utah are both Jack linebacker potential guys. Both of them, everything that I have read about them, people are saying they think they're going to end up on day three. If either of them are there on round four, I would run to the podium, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them go in round three. Those are two guys I really like that are getting third day hype right now.
NFL Mock Draft Database asks, will the Lions realistically take... Well, we should skip that for next week. Because it's a longer discussion.
Okay.
Would the Lions realistically take a quarterback in the first or second round? Is Stafford's back of serious concern?
I say no to both. Do you have it sounded like you had an opinion on it.
Well, realistically, yeah, they could take one in the first round. I don't think realistically the answer should be yes. But actuality, since they're going to be on their way out, they can't take one.
Yeah, I think the win now narrative puts quarterback on the back burner.
Andrew, with Stafford's recent injuries, do you think there's a chance we'll take the quarterback by trading up to late two with our third? Not just to back up someone we could actually build up, like a falling Jake Fromm or Jordan Love. Now, you know we like Jordan Love.
Now, Jordan Love is my third quarterback in this class. I think he can go in the first round. I wouldn't be surprised to see him go in the first round. I don't think he'd be there late second. Jake Fromm, he's kind of like Chase Daniel to me. I mean, do you want to spend a day two pick on a Chase Daniel? I mean, it's okay. Maybe Jacob Eason from Washington makes some sense, but again, he's got some issues. I don't see this staff spending a day two pick with no job security beyond this year. I just don't see it. I think they're gonna pick spots that need to be addressed further.
All right, we'll skip the free agency questions.
All right.
Well, we're running low on time.
Yeah, just hit whatever you want.
We'll hit a couple of these general ones because we can't let these build up too much.
Okay.
Jared, what happened to the Lions, quote, scheming pressure?
Injuries.
A term we heard a lot last year as Lions had at least average sack totals in spite of no big sack leaders. This year, we had a premier pass rusher and then watched the sack totals plummet. What happened?
Injuries.
I don't know. The Trey Flowers wasn't a premier sack leader.
Yeah, no, but he's just an edge rusher. He was a premier edge rusher, but he was never a guy who put up a lot of sacks. He pretty much did what we expected him to do. The lack of production came from no Deshaun Hand, no Mike Daniels, and Snack slowing down. And then you went from Devin Kennard having a career year the year prior to not producing as a blitzer, but instead showing more improvement as a coverage linebacker. And so he kind of went the other direction. All those contributed to those the numbers being down.
Ilmatic L, what do you expect from T.J. Hockenson in his second year? And how will the Lions include Jesse James in the offense?
I think he's going to have a nice second-year bump. Including Jesse James is a difficult one, because if he couldn't find his way in there last season, I don't know what he's going to do this year. Hopefully a new tight end coach can bring some fresh ideas on getting him involved, because I do think he can be a guy that they utilize. He's going to be a guy that makes his living in the 5 to 10 yard range, but there's a role for that in the NFL.
All right, Brandon Kerr, what player of the Lions would you like to see next in the Hall of Fame? Brandon picks Roger Brown. I'll agree with Brandon.
Okay.
Another member of the fearsome foursome, as we've learned this week. We probably should have led that a little.
I thought this was a nice time.
Alex Karras is named to the Hall of Fame. And this was one of his teammates in the early 60s. I think Roger Brown would be a good selection as the next Lions Hall of Fame member.
Biggest first defensive lineman to crack 300 in the NFL. Right?
Yeah, oh yeah, he's a big fella.
And now he weighs 180 pounds.
Well, that's the way they should do it.
Yeah. Who do I think will realistically be the next one?
Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, Calvin. Yeah.
Okay. But who knows? I mean, is he next year or is he 2 years still? He's still a couple of years out.
I think it's going to be Calvin either way.
But Roger Brown, they can name him next year as that same part of the Veterans Committee.
Yeah, I actually think Calvin is next year, but I'm not sure. Not 100% on that anyway.
All right, Hail Mary. I hate to even ask, but do you think the Lions will be chosen for Hard Knocks? Why or why not?
No, it's going to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's going to be the Steelers because they're one of the model franchises, one of the face franchises of the NFL.
I don't think there's any chance. Yeah.
All right. That's pretty much all that we have time for.
Okay.
What about Jamie G. Johnson? Will we be happier next season?
I hope
That's the question.
Yeah. I'll say yes.
I'll say probably not. All right, so now that's it. So, we got a nice bump for the reviewers this week.
Really great. Yeah, all of a sudden the reviews all come in at once, right? And we go from 256 to 261. I noticed some of the other podcasts got little bumps too. So I think, I don't know if iTunes was just
building them
holding
up.
Them back. Yeah, and then the levy breaks and then all the reviews get approved. Maybe they had a cutback on their approval review or something. And then they just waited.
They took a long holiday break.
They get to us and then they're like, all right, you got 6 reviews. All right, we'll approve them all. And then away they go. So DCW 57 Lions wrote a nice review. And Roland updated his review, and he has done that a few times for us. Now, I'm pretty sure that doesn't count as a new review. I think that's still the old. But it just an updated one just gives the fans an updated review of what he thinks.
Which is
great. And that absolutely still helps and keeps things fresh, and it shows that people are you know, still paying attention to us, which is always helpful.
An update on our other little endeavor.
Yeah. So we started our Patreon last week and we had some nice responses. We have 19 people that have contributed to trying to make this podcast better. And that's phenomenal.
Great.
Our first approved member, Gary Luke. From Ireland, our buddy from Ireland. He was the first guy to get approved by Patreon. And
not even a domestic.
Yeah.
An international.
And that's terrific. And there are a plethora of other people that have really done us a really nice service here.
They're the heroes of the podcast.
And what I've noticed is that almost every one of them is going up to like the insider or VIP level, and they're getting the extra benefits of the draft board. And when we're going to try and do some conference calls coming down the road here. And so they're taking advantage of the benefits, and those are things that I'm going to be constantly updated and putting out and producing, and the rankings will change and more information will be gathered. And it'll be a fun off season. It'd be nice to not just keep making the board for, you know, like 4 or 5 people. It'd be nice to have a bigger audience that gets to appreciate that.
Hoard that board. Like there's no tomorrow.
I'm excited.
But the poor thing for these Patreon folks is that you're not doing what I told you should do. Oh, just other things that you should have been offering that I was volunteering you for, for a Patreon would go.
Lunch with Eric. For $200 was probably
Eric would buy. All right.
No, I thought you wanted me to buy if it was like $250 or I forget what it was.
There was different. The restaurant decision was based off of the amount they contributed.
Right, that'd be hard. Like for Gary,
but Applebee's for $200. Well, Gary's out of luck.
Gary couldn't do it
unless you just made it a long term deal. Like, hey, Gary, it's not going to happen this year, but it's going to happen sometime.
We'll get a plane ticket and. We'll have to add up the cost for the plane ticket here. But
yeah, that would have to roll in as well.
Yes. You know, we're always interested. If people think that if they're interested in coming up with something, I'm willing to listen. So we want to make this better. We want to make this more fun for people. And so this is an opportunity for us to do that. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no, greatly appreciate it. Yeah. So that's it. That's it for this week. Next week we'll definitely be talking more draft. We'll hopefully be talking about the last couple of position coaches that have been hired, and we'll be talking about free agency.
Do a Senior Bowl preview next week. It makes a lot of sense.
It's coming, right? Yeah, we'll do the Senior Bowl preview next week.
Yeah.
All right, so that's it. That's all we got. And as we plunge into winter around here, although it was well delayed.
Yep.
And until next time, let's go Lions.